You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Friday, April 23rd, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and subscribe to the show. Smash that button so it slides right to your phone once the show goes live. We have a double dip as far as guests go today. We will talk about the Geico 500 in NASCAR. That's with Jeff Cugliandro, and UFC 261 with Andre Khachaturian. I wanted to find the most complex names in the world. Panionovich, Cugliandro, Khachaturian. Say those names eight times fast. No, don't try it. Record check, 117, 111, and 5, down 3-5. We've taken a little bit of a break from baseball. We do have three in football, though, which is wild to say that we have three football picks at the end of April. Two draft-related and one in the FCS playoffs, Saturday, April 24th. We have Missouri State plus 7. Now, this market was 7.5 Tuesday, Wednesday, got to 7 Wednesday night, Thursday morning, and I talked to a couple of shakers and movers in Vegas that said, yeah, I don't believe this will be around for long. So we took the 7, and Vegas Rick thinks this game is going to close 4.5-4. Take that for what it's worth. But we do have Missouri State against North Dakota. That'll be 308-917 rotation number. That's a 4 o'clock kick on the East Coast. Took 7 with Missouri State. And then the two plays in the draft kitty, we went with J.C. Horn under 13.5, minus 115. That number now, same position, 13.5, but the under 150, 160. There we go. That's what we like to see. And, of course, hopefully a free space on Mac Jones under 17.5. We got that minus 110 first week of March. Average position now on Mac Jones, 3.5. Feel pretty good about that. Boston Bruins, a perfect 6-0. Since the trade deadline. And we talked about this team around the trade deadline on a future market bet to take them 20-1, 18-1. I'm involved a couple different ways. I also drove to Rhode Island and told that story. I thought I was getting 18-1, but Sportsbook Rhode Island didn't have that available. They had 14-1. Hopefully, y'all are invested one way or the other at a really good price, because before the deadline, they needed some second-line help, and they got that with Taylor Hall. They needed a fourth-line guy. They got Curtis Lazar. And they needed a pretty solid puck-moving defenseman. They bring in Mike Riley. Most importantly, though, they get Tuukka Rask back. And they've gone Rask, Swayman, Rask, Swayman. The net belongs to Rask, though, in the playoffs. And that makes me happy, because if he's healthy and that defense continues to get healthy as well in front of him. McAvoy and Grizzlick back on the top pairing. Lozon back. Kevin Miller should be back soon. That is a tough team to beat 4 out of 7. They don't score goals like Toronto or the Lightning, but it's tough to score on Boston. And you just take a peek at the future market and see what the odds have done. It was 2018 before the deadline. 14-1 at the Westgate in Vegas. 13-1 FanDuel William Hill. 12-1 MGM, 11-1 Circa DraftKings Sugar House, 10-1 at PointsBet. And the shade is real for the local guys in Boston. If you have a local bookie, good luck finding anything double figures. Some guys have 7-1, 8-1 on the Boston Bruins. Now that's the hometown tax you have to pay. You're not going to get 14-1 in Boston or New England on the Boston Bruins. But again, right team, right price when it comes to the futures. Please try and avoid all this late hype on Steph Curry to win the NBA MVP. This happens all the time at the end of a season. Curry gets hot. And it's not always Curry. It's always some player in some sport. Like, there was a lot of Josh Allen hype at the end of the last NFL season. Josh Allen went from 30-10-1. It's like he's not going to win the MVP. It's either going to be Mahomes or Rodgers. The MVP this year is going to be Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid. And the numbers all tell you that. But I think sometimes the sports books try and bait you on not missing out on the next thing or the big bet. A couple sports books posted tweets about how they slashed their odds on Curry. Steph Curry was 100-1. Now he's 20-1. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Don't miss out. Don't miss out, even though you already missed out from 100-20. One book said, we had Steph Curry at 125-1. Now we're at 18-1. And then a bunch of fire emojis, maybe like a lightning bolt. They're essentially trying to get the hype up on Curry. Look at this huge movement on Steph Curry. And then you think, wow, that's a big move. I better jump in. The odds tell the truth, though. The betting odds at William Hill, MGM, DraftKings, FanDuel. Nikola Jokic at William Hill is minus 400 to win the MVP. That implies an 80% chance of probability. A little bit lower at other places. 380 on the Joker, FanDuel. 350 DraftKings. 325 MGM. He's going to win the award. 8 times out of 10, he wins the award. Maybe there's a strong push on Joel Embiid. That's the only other guy that's going to win the award. Embiid, 350 William Hill, 350 FanDuel, 300 DraftKings, and plus 275 at BetMGM. But that's it. Just draw the line there. Those are the two candidates. That's it. If you're throwing a flyer on Curry or Giannis or Lillard, don't do it on Harden because he's probably not going to play until the postseason. Harden was 15-1 2 weeks ago, but now that he's going to be out for extended time, he's dead as far as the MVP odds. Jokic minus $4. That's the number you should focus on. Don't look at what Steph Curry has done. Yeah, it's great. He's played well. He had a hell of a run last 2 weeks. 53 against Denver on April 12th. 42 at Oklahoma City, 47 at Boston, 49 at Philly, 18 at Washington 2 days ago. The number to pay attention to is Jokic minus 400. That's it. That's the tweet. Okay, Curry's gone from 100 to 20. Doesn't matter. A, you missed 100, and B, he ain't winning it. That's what that market tells you. You applaud the recent stretch for Steph Curry. I love to watch him play. He's one of the best players I've ever seen play live. I remember covering the Bulls in Chicago. Curry would shoot from half court, and I'm not talking step, heave. He's standing up taking jump shots straight up and down. And he's making 4 or 5 out of 10. And then he would shoot in the tunnel. He would heave it. It would go in. He wouldn't leave until he made it. He put on a show. The handles, too. He's hanging out, dribbling 2-3 basketballs, signing autographs, shooting from 35 feet. A true showman and the best three-point shooter I've ever seen. But he's not winning the MVP. There's a lot going on in the television business right now when it comes to sports betting. We're seeing glimpses of the future pop up around the country. And NBC Sports has really been all over the BetCast. They did it a couple times in Houston. They tried it out in Philadelphia, and NBC Sports Chicago did their first BetCast last night, Bulls and Hornets. David Kaplan, Kendall Gill, Teddy Greenstein from PointsBet. Essentially, there's a betting column on the screen, left side, throughout the entire game, with live spreads, player props, exotics, and it's updated all game long. Top left is always the spread, the money line, and the total. And these numbers fluctuate because things change over the course of the game. I took a screen grab at one point, Chicago -6.5, Moneyline Bulls -285, Hornets come back +235, total 216.5. And after a quick 8-0 spurt, that total goes up. After a drought for 3 minutes, total goes down. Fluid market all game long, but you're watching a game through the eyes of a bettor. And I think the coolest part is that they were tracking all of the player props. Vucevic, 23.5/9. So his number, 23.5, he had 9 points at this point in time. White, 15.5, he had 9. Williams' point prop was 9.5, he had 3. And it went down the list. So NBC Sports Chicago was tracking all of your player props. They did it for points and rebounds and assists. Then they had exotics like Rookie of the Year odds because LaMelo Ball is a -304 favorite at points bet. Edwards 2-1, Halliburton 6-1. The game is going on 85% of the screen. But that bar on the left, that 15% column from top to bottom, had all of the betting information. And it was cool to monitor that game in the fourth quarter. Bulls up 25, 9:14 to go. Points bet had Bulls -18.5. 99-73 Bulls, 7:51 to go. Points bet 21.5. The problem with a lot of these betcasts is that you need the right team of announcers. I think Cap is a perfect pivot man. He's a great host. But the former players don't really help you here because they just don't understand it. They don't make bets. They don't understand. And then the broadcaster is trying to tee up the player who doesn't really know much about betting. Ideally, you need a bookmaker and a bettor, but you also need entertainment value. And therein lies the rub with sports betting content. The sharpest bettors in the world are awful on camera. Bookmakers know how to move markets and raise stakes and change prices, but how do they look on camera? Can they speak? That's the problem. But the perfect combination would be a host who dabbles with a bettor who understands the ebb and flow of a game and knows when to strike, and then a bookmaker who's explaining why the line is here and not there. That's the balance, and the first company to do it right is going to make a lot of money. Ideally, you have a guy like this hosting the show.
Situations, the Jaguars. They're getting confidence.
Here we go. Stafford, third and goal to the end zone. It is caught! Fourth quarter, Stafford! I tried to tell you people this about 20 minutes ago. Inside the number, inside the live number. It was inevitable, boys and girls. It was inevitable that he was going to come back from 17 and beat down 3.
Audio courtesy of VSiN. That is back in the fall of 2018. Yours truly and Kenny White. Now, Kenny White is one of the best odds makers in the world. And Kenny was very good at being engaging, number one, because that's very important. But he knew how to make a number and he knew how to move the number. So if a football game was -8.5, he'd go, that's too high. The line should be 6.5. And we'd take the 8.5 and the team would lose by 7. He knew when to strike. And it's getting somebody like that on the betcast that helps you out. Those VSiN days, though, whew. We used to do the Green Zone, Kenny and I, from 12 to 6 p.m. Pacific on the West Coast. So we did 6 hours of play-by-play, essentially, betting play-by-play on the radio, which is very hard to consume. It's a good idea, but it wasn't really executed all that well. I would tell my bosses, I don't think people are listening to the radio when football is on. Especially at home, you're watching the screen. And that betcast, that idea with the alternate broadcast, like you can watch NBC Chicago, you can watch your traditional Bulls Hornets broadcast, but if you're a sports bettor or a fantasy player, you'll turn on the alternate cast. I'm telling you, the company that gets that right is going to be way ahead of the curve, and they're going to set the tone for the rest of the industry. I saw this story on the lines, at the lines US. Headline, how the NFL's new deal with DraftKings, FanDuel, and Caesars will affect sportsbooks and the way that you will watch football. Wasn't that long ago the NFL said that sports betting was bad. It will ruin the integrity of the sport. Well, in a deal that may have come as a surprise to many, the NFL announced a tri-deal. DraftKings, FanDuel, Caesars Entertainment to become their first ever official sports betting partners. Now, this news came out last week, but I wanted to give it some time to sort of permeate the market, and I wanted to see what people thought about it. Here's what the deal means for the sports books. Each book has their own set of privileges, and the details of the deal are different for all three. But to start, they all have this in common. All three will have betting content available directly in the NFL app and NFL.com. That means live odds, lines, props, all of that linked out to the NFL apps and websites each week. Hello, advertising. I'm on NFL.com. I'm on my NFL app. Wow, look at that number at DraftKings.
I'll go bet there.
Also, they get the free-to-play contests, which that's just icing on the cake. That's not where the money comes in. Here are the individual deals, though, and how they help all these books. From the DraftKings side, it includes integrations across NFL media properties, including a continued prominent presence within the NFL Red Zone. Hello! DraftKings odds, Red Zone. Mm-hmm. Live odds, real-time impact, next-gen stats will likely be included in the integration. And Scott Hansen may now dedicate some of his continuous airtime to over-unders, point spreads, and betting breakdowns during Red Zone. Alrighty. The biggest development for FanDuel is their integration into seven NFL Network pregame broadcasts in 2021. Specifics aren't yet available on what this exactly will entail, but we'll likely see extended segments or even entire pregame shows with FanDuel branding. NFL Network will likely discuss spreads, over-unders, and where bettors are going with their money for that week's biggest games. And Caesars Entertainment, the NFL's longest gaming partner, continues their role as the NFL's official casino sponsor. Per the NFL's release, Caesars is also expanding the relationship with the league, and fans can enjoy an enhanced experience at Caesars casinos and their sports books and online, all while earning Caesars rewards credits and tier status they can use to unlock incredible experiences. Okay, sports betting's bad. David Purdom had a couple bombs the other day. Caesars completed its acquisition of bookmaking company William Hill for approximately $4 billion. That's a lot of bread. And Sling TV announced the launch of a DraftKings basketball betting channel. Baseball and hockey channels expected to follow, and I guess they'll probably dip their toe in the water during football. Hmm? I heard this rumor a couple weeks ago about Dave and Buster's. Those of you that like the sports betting stocks, you may want to check out Play, P-L-A-Y. There's been a little bit of movement last couple of days, but nothing crazy. Last check on Thursday afternoon, the stock was $45 or $46. Turns out there's going to be a sports betting deal with Dave and Buster's and a sports book. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but remember where you heard it when you see the news. Dave and Buster's wants you to come in and bet sports there. So the whole family can lose money now. You give your $25, $30 card to the kids, and you can go bet your five-team parlay at Dave and Buster's. There's fun for the whole family. I would expect Dave and Buster's stock to go up once the announcement hits. They're going to have bettable kiosks and potentially a counter at Dave and Buster's. There you go. And it's never too early to bet college basketball futures. Somebody walked into the South Point earlier this week in Vegas, bet three stacks on Villanova to win it all, 25-1. It would win $75,000. I respect the hell out of a bet like that. I like to bet a little to win a lot. I don't like to bet $770,000 to win $70,000. I am all in on $3,000 to win $75,000. But in all seriousness, this is probably a good time for you to bet Gonzaga to win it all. We talked about this November of 2020. Bet Gonzaga now. 8, 9, 10 to 1. Because the schedule is a cakewalk. They're going to lose maybe one game in the non-conference, and they're going to blow through the West Coast Conference. And they're going to be a one seed, and they're probably going to go to the Final Four. So you should probably add that to your portfolio right now. And I see 7 and 8 to 1s right now on Gonzaga. Well, I don't want to tie my money up that long. I'm telling you, it's not a bad bet. Ask my buddy Joey. Talked about him multiple times on this show. He took Gonzaga and Baylor 7, 8 to 1 in November. And he chilled out for the whole national championship game. If you bet Gonzaga right now, 7 or 8 to 1, we'll talk about it all fucking year, how this is Mark Few's best team ever, like we always do. They'll choke in the Final Four or the title game like they always do. But seriously, why not? Gonzaga, 7, 8 to 1 right now. If they get to the Elite Eight or the Final Four, you can't lose. And odds are good, they're going to get there. Joining us now on Chicken Dinner, we're going to talk about two sports that I don't usually touch on. And to do that, I need some help. I need some expertise. We're going NASCAR and UFC. First, we go to the wheels and we tag in Jeff Cugliandro, who's on Twitter at NASCAR Visionary. He's been handicapping NASCAR for over 20 years. And the last time Jeff and I talked, he told me that anybody can win at Daytona. I don't know that you had Michael McDowell at 100-1, but you did say anybody can win there, and you were totally right. And now it's time to talk about the Geico 500 at Talladega. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. It's great to be on. Really looking forward to a great race down in Alabama this weekend.
Big difference between Daytona and Talladega. Where does it differentiate the most for you?
It does in a certain aspect that they are different from each other, but together they are much more similar than the rest of the tracks that are run on the NASCAR circuit. I think the one thing you got to look at with Talladega is the fact that the track is so wide. So not only will they be running wide open, but they have a very wide track in which to maneuver on and make the action all that much more exciting.
What do you look for first and foremost when you're looking for a driver at Talladega? Because you taught me 3 or 4 years ago at Veast, and it's all about the right driver at the right track. So when you look at this list of drivers, I've got the Westgate odds up here on the outrights. I've got Denny Hamlin, 10-1, Logano, Elliott, Larson, Blaney, 12, Byron, Keselowski, 14, Busch and Harvick, 16. What do you look for specifically in a driver when you look at the Geico 500?
Well, Sam, I think we look at not just a driver, but we look at drivers. Due to the fact that if you take the last six races, for example, at Talladega, generally about 50% of the field does not finish on the lead lap. And if you're not finishing on the lead lap at a track like Talladega, then you can basically assume that that driver has had some sort of incident issue. Ultimately, there are so many incidents, and the incidents can compile so many cars that you really look for strength in numbers. And what you would like optimally would be to find a driver or drivers that are still alive, cars in good shape towards the very end of the race, and you've got a bullet to fire with hopefully a chance to get a win. So you look at drivers who generally can keep their car clean, and that's a really good place to start when trying to handicap a track like Talladega.
Who keeps the car clean?
Great question. Generally, we see drivers like Denny Hamlin, who's done so well at both Talladega and at Daytona. The other driver that pops right up is Ryan Blaney. He's won two out of the last three races at Talladega. An excellent, excellent super speedway racer who's really coming into his own in his career as he's maturing, you know, as a driver. And I think the other one that you look at is Joey Logano. He's led all drivers with 323 lead laps at the last 13 races combined between Daytona and Talladega. So of your favorites, those are the ones that really stand out.
So how about people that are a little bit longer down the page? I mean, it's easy for us to look at the top and pick and choose there, but you know, there are some numbers, 20, 25, 30, 40-1. I had Chris Bell at Daytona, and Bell was in the hunt for a little bit, and then he wasn't near the end. Is there somebody middle of the pack or maybe a little bit deeper that when you see the name and the number, it leaps off the app?
I think what you've got to do is find your drivers who are mid-priced. And in this case, I take a look at Eric Almirola at 20-1. Even though Almirola had an early exit back in October at Talladega, his worst finish is ninth place in five out of the last six at Talladega. So you can count on him being up front unless there's been some sort of incident issue that's taken him out. The other one that I like is Austin Dillon. He's a former Daytona 500 winner, and he finished sixth at Talladega last year, and you can find him at 20-1. Of the mid-range guys, those are the two that I like the most.
It's interesting because you taught me a while back that you love the matchups, and back when some of the casinos in Vegas were doing the group plays, you really like to attack those markets because it's easier to beat one driver in a head-to-head or two or three other drivers in the group. But from what I can gather from what you're throwing down here is that this is one of those races where you like the outrights more than you like the exotics. Why is that?
Well, again, you're exactly right, Sam. The two races at Talladega, the two races at Daytona, are the only time that we really approach our wagering on NASCAR in a completely different manner, and we're looking for drivers to win. And I think that the value there comes in, again, due to the attrition level. If you've got a driver, and let's say you're laying 120 or you're laying 110 or you're even getting even money, when there's a 50% chance roughly that your driver is going to be taken out or is going to be removed from the race early, you really lose the value. Okay, at a track where incidents aren't so high, then your matchups carry more value. But here you're looking for a driver who can win the race, and nearly anybody in the field can win the race, and that's what makes the value on betting on a winner different at a track like Daytona and Talladega.
These group matchups, man, I'm looking at them. It looks like the books don't know what the hell is going to happen, because I'm looking at Group A, Hamlin 260, Logano, Elliott, Larson 275. There's really no variance there. And I'm looking at Group B, Group C, Group D, E, F. And there's really no separation between any of the four drivers on the betting sheet. So I don't think the books know what to expect with the groups.
I think you're exactly right. And you know what? That transcends to the matchups. If you look at the 20 matchups, the only favorite, everybody else is 110 across the board.
Yep.
The only favorite is Denny Hamlin. And it doesn't matter where they start. It doesn't matter if the position gap between the two drivers that are matched up against each other is 8 places, 12 places. At Talladega, you can make up those spots, and they expect you to do so. And that's why everybody is really 110 across the board. Plus, there is the wild card of the big wrecks and who those will take out. They can take out a leader or a top driver just as easily as they could take out, you know, a Ricky Stenhouse Jr. So you've really got to be measured when it goes to a track like Talladega about how you're going to approach this and how you're going to survive the attrition that will happen and ultimately where you can be with just a few laps remaining.
Is there a driver to avoid? We've talked about people you like. We've talked about some mid shots, longer shots. Is there a driver that you see on the page and think, not this weekend?
Well, two big names. And that's Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski.
Oh.
Now, if you look at them, they have combined, one top five finish in their last 13 starts at Daytona and Talladega. You just don't see that. These are two drivers that are fine drivers, and you just don't see top drivers struggle. But when it comes to the super speedways, they end up getting caught up in a wreck or have some sort of issue that ultimately has kept them out of the top five. The other name I'll throw at you is Martin Truex Jr. Okay, in the last 6 Talladega races, his best finish is 20th. Now, these are 3 of the best drivers on the circuit. But when it comes to these super speedway races, they've had a hard time finding their groove.
And you love Truex at Daytona.
Truex at Daytona. He had his fighting shot. But again, trying to avoid the issues that can be caused by others. Even if you're driving just a wonderful race, you can get so easily caught up in somebody else's mess. And we see these wrecks where they take out 14, 16, 18 cars. Once that happens, boy, your goose is cooked.
Yeah, he was up there for a while. He was contending for a long while. But I just think it's fascinating that you love a guy at one track and then you don't like a guy at another track. I think the average person that bets on NASCAR, they don't understand. They find their guy, or they find their team, or their Ford or Chevy or whatever, and they just stick to that. But you're smart enough to understand that you know, this guy isn't good here, or maybe this guy's really good there. And I think it's not easy for everybody to understand the horse for the course or the racer for the course.
Here's what I would say, Sam. You look at a driver like Truex, you look at a driver like Larson, okay? Neither one has ever had any great success on a super speedway track. However, they are talented enough and they are in a sharp enough ride that if they can just avoid an issue, okay, there's no doubt that they can and should be in the top, you know, few going into the last laps. So you may have a great driver, but it's all about how clean he's going to race at these two tracks.
Why are physics and analytics so crucial and so important to you when you handicap NASCAR?
When you want to talk about physics, and that's really, I get a big smile all the way out here in California when you mention that. The reason why I am so enamored when it comes to physics and wagering on NASCAR, it doesn't really come into play as much at a track like Talladega or Daytona. Where it really comes into play is at these short tracks where you can see the rotation of the car. You can see the car lower down and dive into the corner. Then you can see it raise up coming out of the corner. And by seeing the motion of the car, you can tell what a driver is doing, when he's on the gas, when he's on the brake, how the car is transitioning through a corner, how well it's moving. Those are all things that you can use as cues to help you become a better handicapper. Now, we see those things a lot more when NASCAR is holding qualifying, but more importantly, when they're holding their practice sessions. You can really evaluate the cars next to each other, not just on the clock with the analytics, but you can actually take a look at the behavior of the car, and it'll give you a good idea of how well the car is set up by the way the driver is able to get into the gas early and brake early to get into the corner and stay low and make the cars turn. Those things are really important when we get to the short tracks. On a super speedway like Talladega, we want to see that they have the speed to not just draft, but to push and to lead. The physics really come more into play on the shorter tracks, but they're a very, very valuable tool.
He is the smartest man I know when it comes to NASCAR and NASCAR handicapping. At NASCAR Visionary on Twitter, that's where you can find Jeff and all of his content. The Geico 500 is this Sunday, and it sounds like we're going with some heavy hitters here. Denny Hamlin, circle him. Ryan Blaney, circle him. Joey Logano, circle him. Anything I missed?
Here's what I would say, Sam. I would say that we pick a team and we look toward like one of the top drivers. Maybe we take Blaney at 12-1. Okay. Then we drop down to Amarola or Dylan at 20-1. Then if you want to go really long, you look at a driver like Chris Buescher, 40-1, Ryan Newman.
There we go. Now we're getting deep.
Ryan Newman at 50-1. Okay, Ryan Newman is finishing the top seven at Talladega in three out of the last four. Okay, then if you want to go really long, you look at Eric Jones at 80-1. He's finished second and fourth in the last two at Talladega, and he won in a Richard Petty car, which he's racing this week at Daytona in July of 2018. Those are your long shots. Get yourself a team of drivers. Hopefully they run clean. And if they run clean, I expect them to be around late in the race.
That's Jeff Cugliandro, the best in the biz when it comes to NASCAR. Again, one more time, at NASCAR Visionary. Jeff, good luck this weekend. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Sam. Have a great weekend.
Joining us now on Chicken Dinner to talk some UFC, jam-packed event in Jacksonville, UFC 261. It's Andre Khachaturian, content guru at NESN, and the only person at NESN that knows really anything about the UFC. What's up, buddy?
That's actually a lie. Thank you for having me, by the way. But Jamie Webster, he can talk fighting too, but I will humbly say that I might know a little bit more than he does.
Nice. Good start. I didn't think that he knew how to really gamble on it. I know he could look at two fighters and decide, all right, I like fighter A over fighter B, but I think if I threw a DraftKings or a FanDuel or a Westgate odds board in front of him, I think he'd be intimidated. And a lot of people are. Like, they like the fight. They want to watch the fight, but they don't really understand how to bet the fight. Does that make sense?
Exactly. And you can say that like with this coming week's UFC 261 championship fight. You have two guys, Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal, and Usman's a heavy favorite. Like, I can pick the fight saying Usman's going to win, but there isn't going to be much value if I go and bet on the minus 400. And in the UFC, one punch can change anything. You know, we saw Masvidal knock out Ben Askren in 5 seconds, fastest knockout in UFC history. So, like, something like that can ruin your bet. So you really got to look at some of the method of victory type of bets. And also just look into the undercard and see if you can find some value bets and guys that people might have not heard of. And they're underdogs for that reason. You know, they haven't really had their shining moment yet, and that's why they're underdogs. So it's important to do your research. Websites like UFCstats.com, Fight Metric, they have a lot of great resources. So you can look at significant strikes landed per minute, takedown attempts, stuffed takedowns, takedown defense, and kind of use those metrics. And I'm a big numbers guy. I have a math degree from USC. So I really like to look at the numbers and try to make my bets based on that.
Well, we'll end with the main event because that's what everybody wants to talk about. But I want to play into your point about the undercard and the lesser known fights. I talk to bookmakers all the time who are either supervisors or risk managers or sportsbook directors. And it's one thing if a guy walks up to the counter with a duffel bag and says, I want to bet $25,000 on Usman. That's normal shit. That happens all the time. But if somebody walks in with a duffel bag and says, I want to bet 25 grand on Journey Newson, or somebody that nobody's heard of, like Brendan Allen or Carl Roberson, that's when the bookmakers get nervous because those fights don't have a lot of handle and those lines aren't as tight as the ones on the upper card.
Right. You make a really good point on that. And just looking at the entire card this week and just doing some research, one fight that kind of stuck out to me is a featherweight bout in the prelim card on ESPN is between Patrick Sabatini and Tristan Connolly. Mm-hmm. Tell you the truth, I don't know much about these two guys, but Sabatini, he's making his UFC debut. His first UFC fight. And but why is this fight popping out for me? Sabatini, this fight's in the featherweight class. Connolly last fought in the welterweight division. So that's two weight classes up. Now he's cutting down to featherweight against a UFC newbie. You know how these fighters, they cut weight and then, you know, right after they weigh in, they bulk up. So Connolly's going to be walking at a much heavier weight because this guy fights in welterweight. He fights in lightweight. Now he's fighting, he's cutting down to featherweight. If he can make this weight cut, I really, really like Connolly. He's an underdog on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Slight underdog. It's not a heavy underdog, but you're still getting good value on that. So that's a sneaky fight that I like to look at. Tristan Connolly plus 184 on FanDuel Sportsbook against Patrick Sabatini.
So what stands out when we go to that fight, Sabatini and Connolly? If you were going to bet on the dog, you said you sort of lean to the dog already. Would you bet Connolly by decision at about 4-1, submission 8-1, knockout 10-1? Which one's the most enticing?
Honestly, in this situation, when you're dealing with if you're a novice bettor and you're going into betting on a fight with a guy who's a UFC newcomer, it's his first UFC fight. Again, a lot of these guys have fought in smaller promotions where their opponents may have been a little bit inferior, so there isn't much information on that in terms of and especially with the statistics. If you're a stats guy, you want to look into the numbers. There really isn't that much statistical information from those lower promotions. So because of that lack of information, I'm just more confident in playing it safe. I'm getting plus money with Connolly. I'll just go play that safe bet with Connolly.
What else on the card jumps off before we get to the main event? Anything else? You mentioned that one of the undercard fights. Is there anything else from the bottom up until the very top that when you look on the app and you're scrolling through and you see whether it's a money line or a total, anything else that jumps off?
I really like Uriah Hall against Chris Weidman. Chris Weidman, see, this is a guy people might want to bet on because he's a former champion. But what they don't realize is that he's lost 5 of his last 7 fights and he's washed up. Meanwhile, Uriah Hall, he's a veteran. He's been around the block for a very long time, won 4 of his last 5. And his only loss was to Paulo Costa, who was just recently fighting for the belt. A loss to Paulo Costa isn't a it's nothing to cry about. You know, it's a tough opponent. And also, three of his last four wins, Uriah Hall's, was via knockout. I really like Hall to win by knockout, plus 210 on FanDuel Sportsbook. Hall's even the underdog in the fight, slight underdog, plus 104. So I think that the reason for that is, again, people look at Weidman. He's a former champion. They fall in love with that, and that's why the odds are what they are. So I like Hall in this one for that reason.
You pay the tax. That's essentially what you're getting at, which I talk about on the show all the time. When you bet on Alabama in college football, maybe the line's 17, but it really should only be 14. A bookmaker knows that people are going to bet on Alabama. They're going to bet on them on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then on Saturday, the public's going to look at the board and think, ah, fuck, I like Alabama, and they're going to bet Alabama. So you sort of have to shade ahead of the expected wave of bets. And that sounds like what is happening here with Weidman and Hall. Weidman minus 130. I do love that you have two dogs so far, Connolly and Hall, plus 185-ish, plus 105-ish. And then finally, the main event, the line in Vegas, Usman minus 420, Masvidal plus 350. And Andre, it sounds like they're expecting this fight to go the distance. Over 4.5 rounds, minus 180. So it looks like a long fight, but a slow grind down for Usman over Masvidal. That's what the numbers tell me, at least.
That's what Usman does. That's why he's so scary. That's why he's been so successful in his UFC career. And that's why he's one of the best of all time. Masvidal getting this rematch is a joke to me. We've already seen this fight. Usman dominated the fight against Masvidal. This should not have been a rematch. People love Masvidal, though. He's a character. He's really built up his brand ever since that five-second knockout win against Ben Askren. People like him because of that, and I get that. But you look at his wins. He beat Nate Diaz. The guy, he's an old – Nate Diaz, come on. He's an older guy now. He hadn't fought in a long time going into that Masvidal fight. And then the five-second win, people have fallen in love with that. Oh, Masvidal is the greatest five-second win. And that was against Ben Askren, who just lost to Jake Paul, who is a YouTuber. So people have fallen in love with Masvidal, and I get it. It's like the aura of him. And Masvidal, he doesn't get knocked out. He doesn't get submitted. In fact, he hasn't been finished since May 1st of 2009, when he was submitted by a guy named Toby Imada at Bellator 5. And May 1st, 2009, Sam, I don't know what you were doing then. I was just finishing up my freshman year of college. That was, what, 12 years ago? What were you doing May 1st, 2009?
I was getting ready to transfer from University of Illinois to Columbia College Chicago because I got denied entrance into the College of Media. That's where I was in May 2009. Wow.
And you use that fuel to your fire, and now look where you are now.
Yeah, look where I am now, working with you. Last thing here, Usman and Masvidal, it sounds like you're passing it, and I don't blame you one bit. I don't like Masvidal in the fight, but I'm not laying 4, 425, 450, even though I'll tell you, there are a lot of people that I really respect that are going to bet, you know, 20 grand to win 5 grand on the favorite. A lot of times those favorites are cheaper than they should be because people love the dogs, especially in boxing, MMA. They love the parlay, the dogs. A lot of the dogs tend to be square sometimes, but even at minus 400, I'm out. I'm not laying 400 on a boxing match or a UFC fight. Is there anything that interests you in the exotics for the fight? We don't like the money line. We sort of think it's going the distance, but how do we bet this fight on the alternate markets?
Well, just to piggyback what you just said, I would say that Usman being minus 400 is still like, I think that number should be bigger, to be honest.
Right, that's what I'm getting at. It should probably be minus 5 or 600.
Yes, but even then, I still would stay away from it. We kind of just talked about how both of these fighters usually go the distance. You know, Usman, again, as I said, 9 of his last 12 wins have been decision. Masvidal is not a guy who gets knocked out. So I think the obvious thing is to kind of bet on Usman via decision. It's a safe bet. You're going to get better value for it than just saying Usman just straight up. But if you want to get a little sexy, Usman, yeah, 9 of his last 12 have been via decision, but 2 of his last 3 wins have been via knockout. So maybe he's figuring something out here, Usman is. And if you want to get sexy, I would go Usman via knockout. You can get a lot more betting value on that one than going by points. He knocked out Colby Covington and Gilbert Burns. That was within the last 2 years. So he's the greatest in his weight class for a reason.
I was at that fight. Covington had him through the first three, and then you saw everything change midway through round three, and then all of a sudden it was Usman.
Yep. Yep, that was his first title defense. And then he had that snooze fest against Masvidal at 251, UFC 251. And then when he knocked out Gilbert Burns earlier this year at UFC 258.
So we like Connolly, we like Hall, we like Usman by decision. And if you're feeling a little frisky, maybe throw some shekels on Usman by knockout.
Correct. And just one more thing.
Yep.
The Jessica Andrade and Valentina Shevchenko fight. That's an interesting thing I just saw on FanDuel Sports. I was kind of shocked when I saw this. Jessica Andrade to win by knockout is plus 5,000.
What?
It's nuts. I would sprinkle a couple dollars on that. I get Valentina Shevchenko isn't the type to get knocked out. She's just much bigger than Andrade is. She's a true 125-pounder. But Andrade averages 6.38 strikes per minute. She's a very volume striker. She's an active striker. So, you know, all she has to do is catch her once, knock her out. We've seen it happen before. We've seen crazier things happen before. She's a very active fighter. And I think Andrade's strategy is to try to finish this fight early because she's not going to go five rounds against Shevchenko. So she's going to give everything she has, throw everything in the kitchen sink in the first two rounds and try to knock her out because she's not going to get her on the ground either. Shevchenko, in the last six fights, she's only been taken down once. So Andrade probably is going to try to go for the knockout in this one and probably won't do it. I think Shevchenko wins via decision, but I wouldn't shy away from sprinkling a few dollars on Andrade.
I have never been more excited for somebody to be knocked out at 50-1. I'm in. Now you got me hooked, Andre.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's a good value bet.
Please follow my man on Twitter at Andre Katch Nessen, Andre Khatch Nessen, Nessen. My man's doing all sorts of content for us at Nessen, and he likes, again, Connolly, Hall, and Usman. Play Usman on the exotics, though. Andre, thanks for hopping on Chicken Dinner, buddy.
Thank you for having me, Samuel.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Jeff Cugliandro and Andre Khatchaturian for coming on to talk Geico 500. And UFC 261. We have three plays pending. Missouri State plus 7. J.C. Horn under 13.5 minus 15. Mac Jones under 17.5 minus 110. Coming up on the show next week, John Lerner will join us. He's one of the sharpest sports bettors I know. And he knows where a lot of these bodies are buried in the sports betting space. He's been in the trenches for a long, long time. Johnny will join us coming up on the Tuesday show. And we've got to start getting ready for the Kentucky Derby, which is next Saturday. I know, May is already here. Uncle Kirk. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next week right here on Chicken Dinner. So it's